This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday, October the 19th, 2013. It's 3 p.m. The mothership has landed. Queer Geeks of Oz is here. Queer Geeks of Oz, for all you LGBTIQ, sci-fi, horror and pop culture fans. History will be made. Time travel will be achieved at Armageddon, at the Melbourne Showgrounds here in Batmania. For the very first time, LGBTIQ people represent with Queer Geeks of Oz, a special panel only at Armageddon. Sci-Fi and Squeam presents Queer Geeks of Oz. Get your geek on, queers.
A to Z of Horror
with Bailey, for horror virgins
only on Sci-Fi and Squeam.
So much is going on right now.
Yeah. Too much.
The queer panel and everything, but Nightmare on Elm Street 2. Nightmare, yeah, I call it the gay nightmare, you know, The sequel. Mark Patton has sent me a statement about the queer panel to support it. And
that's pretty cool.
I know, I'm really excited. I wanted to get his actual voice, that would have been even better, but this is pretty cool. All right, this is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9, and it's a podcast of something that has been way long in the coming, way too long. We've been waiting desperately for this, and that's it.
I've been absolutely hanging out. I've been bugging you every
Who's
day.
Who's that? That's Bailey O'Neill, of course. And this is the A to Z of Horror, the catch-up podcast.
Yep. It's the A to Z podcast part two,
Part two.
Yeah.
These parts take about 6 months to
do. But, wow, is it worth the wait?
Yeah, it is. We forgot what we had done. That's how long it's been.
Wait, you forgot.
Well, I forgot. All right. I forgot. D, E, and F, am
D,
I right?
D, E, and F we're doing today.
That's it. All right, Bailey. So, long time coming.
Oh, yes.
Start with D.
All right. So, we're doing D.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this one. D for Deadites.
Deadites. Which I'm new to that concept, actually.
Why?
Well, the concept of what you call it, Deadites.
But they're actually referred to that in the movie. Okay, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Yeah, Deadites are the zombies / possessed people, possessed corpses from the Evil Dead series.
Right, okay.
Yep.
Any excuse that you have to talk about Evil Dead, yep. I know Bailey will take advantage of this whole situation. So, Deadites, do you know who coined that term, where it comes from?
Probably Sam Raimi, because they actually mention it by name in either Evil Dead 2 or 3, which is Army of Darkness.
Okay.
I know they definitely mention it in Army of Darkness, but I'm not sure if that's the first time they mentioned it.
And, of course, Army of Darkness would be the campest, I think, of all of them.
Oh, by far.
And
it's
almost
basically a comedy.
It is, yeah. I can actually see it as a full-blown musical even. Yeah. You know, something that could easily be put in Broadway.
That would be a really good idea.
The chainsaws and
they would have to, like, warn the first five rows, you will get wet.
You will get wet. Right. We mean with special effects, not actual water.
Well, can it be both?
Yeah. Well, it could be audience participation. Yep. Okay, so D's for Deadites. So we're talking about that franchise, Evil Dead. What other things? It's just specifically Evil Dead, is it?
Yep, just Deadites, just Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So why do you recommend?
Why?
Mm.
Why?
No, I know why, but not know why.
Basically, the Evil Dead was one of the first outrageously violent horror movies. Like, but I think just generally before the Evil Dead. I'm talking about the Evil Dead, the one that's really old, not Evil Dead, the remake.
Yeah, no, we don't have to talk about that one at all.
Oh.
I'm just kidding.
Really? Okay, no, but the Evil Dead was one of the first extremely violent and not subtle horror movies, I think. And before that, horror was mostly subtle with little bits of violence.
Like, slasher here and there.
I mean, it was definitely blood and some gore, but not to this extent.
No.
Like, they actually had to tone it down just to avoid getting an X rating, which is the... I'm pretty sure it's the equivalent of getting an unrated rating, I guess.
Okay.
You know, in America. I know it's a bit different when you're when you're talking a different country and their rating system and equivalents, but it's the equivalent of being unrated in America to get an X. The whole plot, if you could really call it that, of The Evil Dead is that five kids, college kids, go into a cabin in the woods.
Not the movie. 1981. Written and directed by Sam Raimi. Stars, of course, Bruce Campbell, Alan Sandwiss, Betsy Baker, and, demonic possession within an evil evil wood. The woods are evil, too.
Oh, yes.
The trees and things. The flora.
Unreasonably evil. Yep.
Hey, we should do evil plants.
Oh, that's a good one.
You know.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Evil Day of the Triffids.
Ooh. The Happening?
Yeah, bees, evil bees.
Let's not talk about The Happening. No, back to thinking of something else.
So, deadites. That's what these people become,
the worst
do they,
podcast
when they're
ever.
They're possessed through bites. What makes them not zombies, though? Because I always thought they were zombies, a type of zombie.
They sort of are. They're reanimated corpses, but they're also possessed at the same time.
They're demonic, aren't they? That makes them different, does it, from a zombie?
Yeah, okay. Like they're... there's a few examples of when somebody who has definitely died, like they've got their head cut off.
Yeah.
They actually come back and their head, you know, rolls back onto their corpse, and then they come back and then, you know, start clawing at somebody to try and kill them. And then when that person gets the edge, they get, you know, like an axe or a chainsaw or something to try and, you know, get this reanimated corpse off them, they revert back to their old human self.
Yeah, that's really tricky.
Yeah, but it's still just it's just a trick from the demon's point of view, because the demons possess that body, and so they know their memories and their personality and how they were, so they can basically turn them back into that person for a little bit.
Yeah, to trick
and say, please don't kill me, please, I'm better.
Illusion. Yeah, I hate that when that happens.
Oh, it happens, you know, every day, you know.
Yes, I can think of some examples, but we won't go there. But demonic possession, that's going to bring us on to something a little bit in a moment or two.
Yeah, actually, it's a nice lead on.
The Evil Dead, very successful.
It's one of the most iconic horror series ever, really. And even if you don't like horror, you would definitely know, you would have heard of The Evil Dead at
somewhere.
Some point.
Yep.
You know, you would probably know the lead character, Ash, who's Bruce Campbell. In one of a big promotional image for the first Evil Dead is Ash covered in blood and holding a chainsaw above his head and like kind of pointing down.
Yep.
And kind of approaching the camera. So,
I mean, the poster work is just fantastic for the first one in 1981.
Oh, and there's also
the most ferociously original horror film of the year, and that was Stephen King who said that. If it wasn't for Stephen King, bless his soul, you know, he really pushed. He was one of the major factors that this film even got made and had the massive success. It would have been just a little underground hit, perhaps, but instead it actually became more than a cult underground hit. Became a hugely commercial success and led to the Raimis having a very successful career that led to your favourite films of all time, Spider-Man franchise.
Yeah, but after that.
We should do evil spiders.
Oh.
Insects that kill.
No, wait, I've got another...
The Swarm?
No, I've got a letter. It's a bit later that we can talk about these sort of things.
Okay.
But we're not going to spoil
it. No, we're not going to go on about that. So, yeah, thanks, Stephen King. He was a great pusher for this, and the man knows what he's talking about. So it led on with Evil Dead 2 in 87, and then the one we mentioned before, Army of Darkness, 1992. There's a bit of a gap there between 87 and 92.
Mm-hmm.
But where would we be without these films?
Probably nowhere.
Well, we're not here. We're going to be talking about them.
No, probably in the next room.
Yeah. So why would you recommend? Which one would you recommend the most? Would you say to people, you've got to watch all three in a row?
Well, if you don't really want to watch all three, if you don't want to commit to that, I think two. Evil Dead 2 is the ultimate because it's...
Mm.
Because one, it has slightly higher production values than the first.
Yes, they've got money to do more stuff. Yep.
And two, it's basically, it's sort of a half remake of the first one. It's apparently Sam Raimi, he couldn't do quite what he wanted to do with number one. So he just kind of half remade number two into more or less how he wanted number one.
Right. It's also known as Dead by Dawn.
Oh, yes.
And I think to me it would be definitely the most comic horror film of all time. Mm-hmm. It's brimming with comedy. It really is amusing.
Oh, yes. But the really interesting thing, unlike Army of Darkness, which doesn't even try to be scary at all, I think Evil Dead 2 has comedy and, you know, horror elements, but they don't sacrifice. You know, like the comedy doesn't ruin the horror elements.
No,
and the horror doesn't
still
ruin the
has
comedy.
Ghastly
it's still funny
bits.
And it's still scary.
Yeah. All right, so people should watch all of those. That's what you'd say to a horror virgin?
Absolutely.
All right, so that's it. Deadites.
Watch all three or four if you want to count the remake. But if you don't want to overcommit, just watch number two.
Yeah, just steady as she goes.
Pretty much.
And be amazed and amused and thrilled by all the wonderful... special effects, the fantastic gore and guts and blood, and I think the editing for those films is amazing because the different camera angles very new to the genre, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't as static as most horrors have been up until the 1980s, and I think the Raimi brothers and Roger Tappert and all the people involved, you know, left their mark on horror film history, I believe.
Oh yeah. And especially that iconic where it's... it's hard to explain it, but you know when the camera's just rushing through the forest after somebody?
Yep. That was a first, pretty much, of that.
Yeah.
For using it for those sort of scares.
I know, it's fantastic.
It's very effective.
Mm, and especially towards the end of... I think it's number one. It actually goes through the house, like through the cabin, and actually knocks down a few doors.
Yeah.
Which is very effective.
It's just... I want to watch it again right now.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so that's D for Deadites.
Yep.
Or Evil Dead, and that's the letter D.
Yep, I'm happy with that.
A to Z. Next.
D, E.
E.
E. All right.
E.
E for exorcisms.
Yay. I was almost going to say Evil Dead there.
No. Oh, well, I'm more than happy to talk about Evil Dead again.
All right, so there's so many. I mean, there's a huge amount of exorcist and exorcism films and stories made into film.
Yeah.
Which ones do you choose and why?
Two of my favorites. Well, okay, I've only really got one favorite, but you also can't count out the classic. So we'll start with the classic.
Yeah.
The Exorcist.
Mm, of course. 1973, William Friedkin is the director. Very disturbed man, but a great... this is genius.
Mm.
In my mind.
Yeah. Very slow. It's got a very slow burn on it.
Mm.
On The Exorcist, but once it starts up, oh my god.
Oh, it is a classic. I mean, if I was going to recommend anything to any child, I would recommend this film first. I would, if they wanted to do horror, they want to look at horror and go, I want to be scared. You're going to be scared because of that slow burn like you mentioned.
Yeah.
And it just leads up to something that's...
It's very...
Absolutely violent and amazing and scary.
It's hard to describe really how slow it is, but also how subtle and how just really scary it is once it actually ramps up. And even when it ramps up, it's still a lot slower than a lot of other movies.
Yep.
Which makes it all the more scary.
Yep. What is great too is that it's one of the films that I think is iconic. If you saw the poster, The Exorcist, it just says William... Peter Blatty, who was the writer, he also produced the film and did the screenplay, and it's got The Exorcist. I believe it's originally in a putridy limey green with a black background, and it's directed by William Friedkin, it says, and it's got a man who's a priest, as it turns out, a shadow, a silhouette of a man in what looks like a street under street lamp lighting at night. It's just iconic.
Mm.
Everyone would know that. And of course, the music is also very particular and a cult classic. And, you know, a tubular bells, part of tubular bells is used in the film as well.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about
of the movie. And
so what is it? Why do you recommend this one?
Well, okay, to be honest, it's been a very long time since I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just iconic. Yeah. You know, it's... Even if you don't like the movie, it's one of those movies that you need to see, I think.
Yeah, it's like The Godfather, I think.
Exactly. It's The Godfather of horror.
If you're going to say, okay, gangster movies, you have to start with The Godfather and say, that's the one.
Yeah.
You know, there are others, but...
Even just straight drama movies.
Well, it does because it has... It does something interesting. It has real sort of well-formed characters in it that normally horror doesn't bother with. Not really. Not even now. I mean, it's slowly we're getting good horror again.
It's pretty rare.
But it was pretty rare for that time and period of the history of Hollywood in 73. And it's a long film, pretty much, 122 minutes. I'm not talking about the director's cut. But it does have that, you know, a staple of well-rounded, very good actors. We've got the wonderful Alan Bursting, Swedish actor Max von Sydow, who's very famous for being in Ingmar Bergman movies. And those are slow, methodical building films. Jason Miller, Lee J. Cobb, who's a, of all things, a Broadway, serious Broadway actor, and little Linda Blair. Can't forget her. So yeah, look, it has everything in it to make it a wonderful, wonderful picture that is more than just a horror film in my mind.
And speaking of the characters and well-developed and defined characters, there's a few moments, I mean, it's... Okay, two characters die in the movie, and you actually care.
Yeah.
You really care. And more than just outside of other horror, where it's like, oh, I kind of like that character. You actually feel, you know?
Yeah, you really feel. You really feel, damn it. Damn it. I remember the first time I saw it, and my favourite character, I'm not going to give it away too much, although this film's been out for a long time, almost 40 years, of course. Well, it is 40 years. It is 40 years.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Yeah, you do. You really feel for them, but you know it's about... It's also about sacrifice, and it's about a story of what would a human do? How far would you go to save someone from something that is slowly taking them over?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and this could be a metaphor for drug addiction. This could be a metaphor for a religious zealousness. Is there such a word?
No, I know what you mean.
There probably isn't a word like that. You know what I mean? It's about it. I feel it's about addiction and possession and not just literal possession.
No, I can definitely see that.
Mm. Although Friedkin himself was a bit of a riot when it came to... He was very anti-women's liberation, and part of his inspiration was to get back at all these women libbers, he called them, in Hollywood. So, yeah, there's all sorts of different themes going on in this film.
Some more outdated than others.
Yes, exactly. But a lot of fun and a slice of life from the 70s. All right, any other exorcist films? Exorcism films?
Yep. No, I was just actually looking that up during your... Very,
Spiel.
Very wonderful. Yes. I was going to say rant, but no. But we've got The Exorcism of Emily Rose.
Oh, yes.
Now, I mentioned at the start when we started talking about exorcisms, I mentioned there's one classic, which is The Exorcist, and my favorite, which is this, The Exorcism of Emily Rose. It's probably one of the scariest movies I've ever seen.
It's amazing. It really is. And it gave me faith again. You know, exorcism films.
But not just, I agree, but not just that. Also storytelling in horror.
Yep.
Because the narrative of this movie is set, you know, at the time in modern day. At the time, it was made in 2005, so it's not that much of a stretch to say it was, you know, made modern day.
It's pretty recent.
Less than 10 years ago. But anyway, so the narrative is mostly court case of what happened to the character Emily Rose, and was she actually possessed, and was there an actual exorcism?
It's supposed to be based on some story.
It's apparently meant to be based on a true story, but you know, that based on a true story, that kind of, that's got a long history in horror, you know, that
of being baseless.
That sentence, yes. You know, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is based on a real story.
Texas exists.
Yeah, chainsaws exist.
Families like that, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, look, it's a negligent homicide case and involves a priest who's performed an exorcism on a girl. I mean, we're not going to give too much more away. It's directed by Scott Derrickson, has the wonderful Laura Linney in it, the awesome Tom Wilkinson, and Iranian actress Shari Agadashlu. But what's interesting, it's got someone called Jennifer Carpenter in it. And I think it might have been her debut, would I be right, in films? Anyway, it's the one that put her on the map.
I'm pretty sure it is, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, who is she?
She is... She drum plays, roll. Deborah, Dexter's sister in Dexter.
Yeah, and she's also...
John Carpenter's daughter.
That's right. Offspring would be the word, because she's a dead ringer. It's amazing when you see them together, except for the moustache, obviously. I think she's... Yeah, she's a carpenter, isn't she?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. And she performed a lot of her own stunts, I believe.
Yeah, she's actually a contortionist.
Can see that, yeah.
Oh, my... Oh, there's this one scene in The Exorcism of Emily Rose where Emily Rose, the character, Jennifer Carpenter, she almost looks like she's hovering in terms of how she's standing. But she's... It's so hard to describe because she's just twisting and clenching up her entire body in insane ways. You can almost... it looks almost...
Painful. But the worst type of yoga.
It looks fake, but it's not.
Is the thing. She's pretty... She must have been exhausted after doing that.
It's hardcore, basically.
It's a very moving story behind it too, and you just don't really know. It's quite ambiguous, which is what I enjoyed about it too.
Because I agree with
it's going to give everything away, but it doesn't, and it's a very sad film because it's tragic. It's a real tragedy because all of this could have been avoided. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
So it says a lot about psychology and religious repression, and how damaging that is to young people.
Yeah. It is quite a sad movie once you get... I mean, at the time, it doesn't seem that sad. But when you when it's over and you think about it later, you realise, oh, it's actually really tragic.
It is, yeah. It's really tragic what, you know...
Yeah.
What families and what people can do to other people to control them. You know, it's pretty sad.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe more of a horror... Yeah, I don't know.
It's more of a moral psychological tale. Horror, I guess.
Yeah. That'd be true. But with some amazing stunt work.
Oh, spectacular. And even the non-practical, the CGI effects, there's some very subtle ones. And I think subtle CGI is the way to go because it's terrifying.
Yeah.
Like there's a few bits from the character's point of view, from Emily's point of view, where I think she has sort of a panic attack or she has a nightmare or something and she runs screaming through the halls of her college, of her university, and she's seeing all these people around her that have insanely demonic faces, but they only appear demonic after a few seconds.
Yeah, it's
which
not...
Which is way, you know, it's...
More subtle.
It's incredibly effective.
All right, do you have any other exorcist films? Exorcism films? I keep saying the exorcist films.
Oh, it's fine. I don't actually have any other films because, I mean, there's not that many...
Good ones.
Basically. I mean, there is The Last Exorcism, which we've talked about on the podcast before.
That's
and
right.
It's, like I said before, it's not that good.
It's promising.
It's got a lot of potential.
But it lets you down, I feel.
It has some very good bits.
Yep.
But ultimately, it's worth a watch, but only because of the... few good bits that it has.
Same like The Devil Inside. I mean, that only came out last year, 2012.
I don't think I've seen that.
That had a lot of promising things about it. Certainly, the hype around it, the marketing was very clever before the film came out. But it just, I don't know, it just didn't live up to that, what I hoped for, but that's okay. All right, so those are two good exorcism films to recommend, I think.
And one just all right one.
And one okay.
Yeah. Okay, no, but before we move on, I can't not mention this. It's not a movie, but what's probably my favourite TV show? You would know this.
The Simpsons?
No. Really?
Well, they did do a takeoff of The Exorcist.
Okay, yes, that's true.
Yeah.
But no, I'm talking, of course, about American Horror Story.
Yes.
Yep. That was a trick question. it's so obvious what my favorite TV show is. Okay, in season two, American Horror Story Asylum, about a quarter of the way through the season, a character is brought in who is apparently possessed, and of course they Christian Catholic
organized.
I can't remember; it's been a while, but they decide to exorcise him. You know, put him on the treadmill, exercise the demons out of him. But a half a success, half a fail, because they get the demon out of him, but he dies in the process, and the demon jumps into another character, but nobody knows until the last couple of episodes that the demon is in another character.
Right.
And so this character, throughout the rest of the season, is kind of occasionally extremely subtly pulling strings and manipulating people and basically being extremely evil.
Yeah. Well, you'd hope so. That TV series, that's what it's about. I mean, it is brilliant. Well written, even though it has one of the writers from Glee. Interesting concept. A to Z to Horror.
Yep.
With Bailey O'Neill and F.
F. Oh, boy. This brings back memories. But no, we're doing Friday the 13th.
Okay.
One of the most... Once again, just like The Evil Dead, one of the most iconic series in horror, but unlike The Evil Dead, it's probably one of the most iconic franchises ever made.
Oh, okay. I think it's probably one of the most messed up ones.
Oh,
as far as quality and ups and downs.
It's very inconsistent.
Yeah, it's very, very inconsistent.
Yeah, I watched, to prepare for the show, like, months, whenever we did F show, I watched them all in the space of probably 4 or 5 days, and that gave me a really good feel for them, and the quality of them, it's insane. it makes absolutely no sense how it can be so inconsistent.
Yeah, lots of fingers and lots of pies, I think. Yep. And also, it has been going for a long time as a franchise since the first one broke out, was such a massive success for Hollywood.
Oh yeah.
When was the first one out, actually?
Oh god.
78?
No, I think it was somewhere in the early 80s.
Let's see.
No, it was the 80s because
1980.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 1980
was. And I remember that because Halloween was, you know, one of the big
slashes. Halloween was 1978.
Off, you know,
that's
all
right.
These other ones, and that was in the late 70s.
And this can get confusing for some people because some people get confused between the two. Even I have sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not even because I suppose when you think about it, the main villains are very similar.
Yeah, they are. There's even the mask. Friday the 13th, of course. To be honest, one way you can think of it is hockey mask.
Hockey mask
compared
machete.
To Captain Kirk mask. In Halloween.
Actually, but also the setting is another way to... Because Friday the 13th, apart from probably the 10th one, which is Jason X, they all take place at least around a lake.
Why a lake? What's
why?
Do you know
I'm
why?
I'm so glad you asked.
Well, I'm glad you can answer.
Me too. Okay, the story behind Jason, who is the villain, is that prior to the first Friday the 13th, he was at a summer camp, Camp Crystal Lake.
Yes.
Which is, of course, right next to Crystal Lake.
Yep.
And due to the counselor's neglect, Jason drowned. The counselors didn't notice. They were off doing something.
Counselor things.
Yeah. Non-counselor things.
But
anyway. And so the point of the entire series is Jason's reanimated corpse coming back for revenge on the counselors at Camp Crystal Lake, basically. So that's why pretty much all the series takes place around a lake.
So he's not... So he is dead.
That's sort of a grey area for
most of it is a bit of a grey area, yeah. Because apparently he does come... Seems to be alive for the next one in 1981.
He comes back, he dies, he comes back, he dies,
This is the comeback king, I would say. Oh. Friday the 13th, compared to Halloween. And we won't talk about Halloween at all.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about that. It confuses me.
I agree.
Friday the 13th seems to be the comeback king.
Absolutely. But the interesting thing is that... the very first Friday the 13th movie, it actually doesn't have Jason in it at all, except until the very, very last second. And it's actually Jason's mother doing all the killing.
Betsy Palmer plays Mrs. Voorhees. Yep. Yeah.
And then he doesn't even get his iconic hockey mask until the third one.
Okay. So that came out in 82. Friday the 13th, part 3.
Yep.
Mm.
They seem to release them every year for a while.
Yeah, it was up until about 1984. 84, because it was the final chapter. So we fought.
Yeah, they had zero foresight back then, apparently.
All right, so out of all of these, would you recommend that people have to start at the beginning? What are the ones they should not bother with? What are the ones they should, yeah, definitely watch?
The ones that they should not bother with.
Yes. Okay. Let's start there.
I don't remember the number. I think it's number 8, Jason Takes Manhattan. Just skip it. Don't even bother.
It's not like the Muppets.
No.
Muppets Take Manhattan.
Kind of. It's, yeah.
Oh, weird. What a weird, weird time.
So bad.
Things happened in the late 80s. That was just weird. That was 89. Yeah.
Yep. That was the year I was born.
I'm sure it had nothing to do with you.
I hope not.
What about Jason X?
Jason X. Honestly, that one's a guilty pleasure of mine.
Oh,
I love it.
Really? 2002? Oh.
I love it because it's so stupid.
And then there's Freddy versus Jason in 2003.
I hate that. I hate it.
It's not very good. No. But it's the original director, actually, Sean S. Cunningham, of the first one from 1980, good. Which is weird. Which is interesting how they kind of resurrected him there and then he disappeared again. So, mm-hmm. And the last time we saw Jason was Friday the 13th, 2009.
The remake.
I didn't even bother.
You were smart.
Mm.
It's not good. It has a lot of potential. And frankly, the effects, the characters, the setting, it's all so good. But then there's a whole bunch of other stuff that just collapses. The killing, while brutal, is extremely unimaginative.
Yeah, there was such a lot of hype around it, but it just dissipates after you think, oh, I just couldn't be bothered by that stage.
Yeah.
I think after seeing, I did go and see many moons ago, Jason Goes to Hell, and that was supposed to be the very final one.
Yeah.
1993. I just said, I'm not going to go to another one again.
Oh, no. But I think Jason Goes to Hell, the final Friday, that's Friday the 13th part 9, that was the it's either the first Friday the 13th produced, not produced, but I think distributed by either Paramount or New Line. I can't remember.
Okay, because New Line was the original, wasn't it?
Nightmare on Elm Street that jumped to another studio, right? Sorry, my mistake. But that was the first one after Nightmare on Elm Street jumped to New Line, that which is why they had the Freddy glove at the end, pulling his mask down into hell.
Right, yes. So, yeah, it wasn't the final chapter.
No, it wasn't.
So, which ones do you say would be the ones that people should bother to watch? They should watch out of the Friday the 13th.
1 and 2?
Yeah, definitely.
Not 3. Definitely not 3. No.
Oh, okay.
It was meant to be like 3D, like you wear glasses in the theater. So it's a whole bunch of dodgy 80s effects flying towards the camera, and it's very, very bad. Along with the opening, like the title's theme, it's so 80s it hurts.
Oh, I love it.
Like the synthesized drums.
I love that.
The really dodgy bass. It's it's awful.
I think we'll play that another time. I might even put that music in the podcast. Just for you, Bailey.
Thanks.
Well, look, those are recommendations for Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think if there's
What's
any
your favourite of what? That franchise? Which one? I'm not talking about the guilty pleasure one you have, which is dodgy. But out of all of them, is that two?
Probably number one, which doesn't even have Jason in it. But I remember there was another one. There was at least two in the middle, like between 5 and 7 that I liked. I can't remember which ones they were specifically. I think the first one with Tommy Jarvis, which was 4? I think it was 4. I honestly have no idea.
Yeah.
Let's just say 4. It was 4. Watch number 4.
Watch number 4. So that's... Yeah, but that's the one you didn't like.
I don't remember.
That's the final chapter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You didn't like that one. Oh, no, you didn't like the Friday. Oh, no, you didn't like the final Friday one. Goes to Hell. You see, this is the problem. There are too many. Because this is the comeback king, people, remember?
Yep.
You just can't get rid of him.
Yep. There's actually two that have the word final in their subtitle. There's the final Friday, which is number 4, apparently.
Yeah.
And then number 9, which is Jason Goes to Hell, the final Friday.
Yep. I'm sure there'll be one called Jason Actually Dies, finally.
Yeah.
Properly. The end.
I look forward to that day, honestly, because I sort of like the franchise, but come on, it's done. just
leave it. I hope so.
If you can't do anything new with it, just leave it in the corner.
Maybe it'll be Friday the 13th, rest in peace.
Yeah.
All right, that's great. Good recommendations there from D for Deadites.
Yep.
E.
Exorcisms.
Mm-hmm.
And F for Friday the 13th.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Bailey. Bailey O'Neill, A to Z of horror. And what's coming up in the next podcast? When we get round to it.
Yeah, in another 6 months, I can't see that far into the future, unfortunately. So, okay, D, E, F.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you.
What did you do for G?
G, George Romero.
That's right.
Night of
and
the Living
H
Dead.
H was?
Hitchcock.
Ah, that's going to be a fun one.
Yeah.
And H and I was?
International.
International. Yeah. That was a good one too.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun during it.
Hitchcock was fun.
Yeah.
Always fun. Watch your Hitchcock, people. That's what's coming up very soon. And our next segment, our next chunky segment of A to Z of horror on Sci-Fi and Scream. Thanks, Bailey.
Thanks for having me.
On Joy in 94.9. Yay.
Yay.
Real life is scarier than anything we can dream of, and we dream such frightening things. Sci-Fi and Scream. Be afraid. Be very afraid. On Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.